How can we as healthcare practitioners move from just providing disease management to providing true healthcare? That is the question, and this is the answer. Welcome to Reinvent Healthcare, the podcast that helps you grow your practice and expand your skills as a practitioner. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo. Let's dive in. Welcome back to Reinvent Healthcare, the podcast for health professionals and wellness-minded people who are passionate about transforming our broken medical system into a true healthcare system. The protein debate is as old as the hills. How much protein does a human really need? How much protein is ideal? How much is too much? On today's episode, we're going to discuss the science and how you as a human can determine the optimal choices for you, and how you as a practitioner can determine the ideal amount and source for your clients. So let's start off with the discussion of protein. We hear so much about protein in the news today. Get enough protein. We need more protein. We need tons of protein. We need animal protein. Plant proteins are deficient and insubordinate. What's the truth? So let's start with the science of proteins. Probably already know this, but proteins are structural building blocks of the human body. They're also used for functional things in the human body. Biochemical pathways involve proteins, involve enzymes, involve immune function, hormones, mitochondrial function. Proteins are involved in pretty much everything. And they're made of what's called amino acids. And there are 20 amino acids that we've identified, maybe 22 at this point. And some of them are essential, meaning the body can't make them and we have to get them in the diet. That's about 8 of them. Some people say 9. Some of them are non-essential because the body can make them as long as we have enough protein coming in. And some of them are what we call conditionally essential. They're essential under certain circumstances, but not all circumstances. So we don't necessarily have to get them in the diet. We can make them, but sometimes for some people, they can't make them because some of the pathways that we need in the body to create them are broken. Let's just say we don't have enough of the enzymes, the cofactors like vitamins and minerals. And in some cases, there's a genetic variant that makes it so that we just need more of that particular amino acid. And so those are considered conditionally essential. Under certain circumstances, we need more. So we have a lot of different proteins in the body. And number one, they're used for building and repairing tissues. Our muscles, our bones, our skin, our digestive lining are all composed of protein. So obviously we need it. It's not something that's like a non-essential macronutrient. No, we need protein and we need certain amounts of protein in order to have that structural going on. The structural creation, building, especially like kids, and repair. Especially as we get older, as we get injured, broken bones, strained muscles, all these conditions require that we have the right proteins in order to build the body back up. We also need proteins to make enzymes. And as you know, enzymes are catalysts. Enzymes are these proteins, basically, that trigger reactions in the body, that make those reactions go faster in the body. And when we don't make enough of these enzymes, everything slows down. Digestion slows down. Healing slows down. Repair slows down. The immune system slows down. We also need proteins to support the immune function, to support the pathways that fight off macrophages and lymphocytes and all that. We need protein in order to create these. We also have proteins that are transport molecules, that are molecules that transport around the blood, like hormones. Hormones cannot be carried around in the blood without a binding protein for the most part. So when we don't have enough of these binding globulins, binding proteins, we can't transport our hormones as well. And so when you see people in your practice who have deficiency symptoms of certain hormones, it may not be that they have a deficiency of the gland making that hormone. It may be that they don't have the right balance of binding globulins. It might be that they have too many of these binding globulins or too little of these binding globulins that are causing more of the free hormone to be traveling around in the system. It's part of hormones. Hormones are made of proteins, of amino acids. And amino acids are the building blocks, like we said. Neurotransmitters are made from amino acids. So we need to have the amino acids. We need the amino acids more than we need proteins, because proteins get broken down in the digestive tract into amino acids. And so if we break down a protein, it goes into amino acids, and then the body has to build it back up. There is some confusing information, I think, about like collagen, right? We should take collagen as a nutrient, as a supplement, as a food. But the point is that when we take in collagen, it's protein, and the body has to break it down into its constituent amino acids and then use nutrients to build it back up. Now, the benefit of taking in the collagen is that you have all the amino acids that it needs, but you're relying on the body's ability to be able to break it down and put it back together, because whole proteins cannot escape through the intestinal lining and into the bloodstream. So they all have to be broken down, right? So this is super important to understand. And just going back to collagen, if you give the body the hydroxyproline, proline, lysine that's needed to make collagen, and it has enough vitamin C and all the other nutrients to help put it back together again, the body can make it. We don't have to take in, we don't have to eat collagen. That's not an essential nutrient. So let's talk about where we get protein, right? There's so much controversy over what's a good source, what's a whole protein, what's a protein that's not quite as good. And the saying goes that animal proteins are complete proteins and plant proteins are not. Well, it's not that they're not complete. It's just that there's different ratios of the amino acids. And we might need a little bit more plant protein than we need animal protein, depending on which amino acids we're looking at. But to give you an idea, we have meat, we have chicken, we have cheese, we have eggs, and they're all considered animal proteins, and they have certain amounts of protein, and very large amounts, considerable, of protein per ounce, per 4 ounce serving, or whatever we want to look at. And plants are considered this deficient source, but in reality, people don't recognize just how much protein is in plants. And they're complete, they may not be as high in, say, methionine or cysteine, couple of the amino acids, but they can balance each other out. So broccoli, for example, broccoli is such a healthy food. It's loaded with sulforaphane. It's protective of liver function. It's protective against cancer. It's protective and has all these diindolmethanes and things like that that are important for hormones balance. Well, broccoli, 2 cups of cooked broccoli has 5.2 grams of protein. Now, cooked broccoli, 2 cups of it is not all that much. Right? It's easy to eat 2 cups of cooked broccoli. Make a stir fry. Go to a Chinese restaurant, and they usually have 2 cups of cooked broccoli on your plate. I personally eat a lot more than that, because when I eat cooked broccoli, it's usually the winter time, and I'm making a soup. So I make this big old pot of broccoli and other veggies and break it down and then blend it so we can eat more and then add good fats to it and other, you know, spices and all that, which, by the way, are loaded with nutrition. So it's easy to get a lot of protein from broccoli, right? You can eat 4 cups of cooked broccoli. It's a little over 100 calories. And now you have like 10 grams of protein, which is hefty. Kale, 2 cups of cooked kale has 7.4 grams of protein. That's a lot of protein. So, and it's easy to eat 2 cups of cooked kale once it's cooked and you put on a sauce or you saute it in garlic and all that. And again, blending into soups, etc. You can do these raw. Raw broccoli, I usually, if I'm going to do raw broccoli or recommend raw broccoli, we have it shredded like in a slaw or blended into a soup. Same thing with kale. We usually do it in like a smoothie or a soup or whatever. Lentils, like people think about the benign bean, right? That they're inferior sources of protein, but a cup of cooked lentils, which isn't that much, that's a typical serving that someone would eat, has about 17.8 grams of protein. That's a lot of protein. Lupini beans are the bean that has the highest amount of fiber and the highest amount of protein, and they have 28 grams per cup. And we're starting to see folks making pasta out of lupini flour, because it's way healthier and way higher in protein and way lower in carbs than making it out of gluten-free alternatives, quinoa, rice, or gluten itself, wheat. So it tends to be a good source, 26 grams per cup of lupini beans. And most people, when they eat beans, they're going to eat about a cup. You know, you have it on your plate and you mix in your salsa and put it on a taco, however you're going to eat it. Black beans, 15.24. So you can see that these are good sources. When we have people who say plant proteins are not good sources, they're comparing foods that don't have high amounts of protein. Quinoa is up there. A cup of quinoa has not as much as the beans, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 per cup, right? So we have to be looking at plant sources of protein as being very viable. And a lot of people are thriving on plant-based diets and getting a lot of protein. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to be on a 100% plant-based diet, but we need to be thinking about plants forward, because plants are not deficient in so much if we do it right. So let's talk about some of the downsides of protein. When we look at protein, there's a lot of people out there saying we need protein-forward diets. We need to be eating a lot of protein, that it's the most important nutrient. And I'm not going to disagree that it is an important nutrient, because we fall apart if we don't have enough protein. But there are downsides to high levels. Now, a lot of times we say high protein intake is linked to kidney disease. And there aren't really studies that show that in a healthy person, if we have more protein than they need, that it's a stress on the kidneys. But if somebody already has a stress on the kidneys, then high protein can be more stressful. And guess who has a stress on the kidneys? People with diabetes, people with insulin resistance, people who are pre-insulin resistant and their blood sugars are going bonkers. Kidney disease is not for the faint of heart. It's not something that you want to induce in somebody. And sometimes you don't know that they have kidney problems. So I think that too much protein can lead to a more acidic state in the body and can lead to kidney disease in somebody who's susceptible or who already has the first signs of it, right? So if somebody you know has pre-existing kidney, you got to moderate the protein intake, right? You got to go slowly and increase it and just make sure that you don't stress the kidneys even further. So let's talk protein powders. There's so many protein powders on the market, and a lot of people are filling up on protein powders, and there's a lot to it. I'm going to show you how these protein powders compare to like an amino acid blend. So if you are working with somebody who needs more amino acids, there are ways to get this in ways that are digestible and without the downsides of excess protein. Another downside of excess protein is that too much protein over and above what the body needs gets converted to glucose. And a lot of folks are talking about how, oh, so much protein and it helps to keep the blood sugar steady. The right amount of protein does. Too much protein is a problem. And I'm going to show you some ways that we can calculate, and you can help your clients calculate how much protein they need. There's a lot of controversy about this, so I'm just going to give you some opinion and some scientific facts as well. So Sacha Inchi, most people haven't even heard of it, but it's a South American seed that they make protein powder from. It's a very high protein seed. It's also high in omega-3 fats, so that has a positive side. You can put somebody on Sacha Inchi seeds, or if they really do need more protein, they're in a state of needing repair. They just had an injury. They strained muscles. They broke bones. Or they're repairing or healing from an injury or disease. They may need more protein than they can actually eat through their digestive tract. And if they have impaired digestion, which a lot of people do in our society, it doesn't matter how much protein you eat. It matters how much you digest. And if somebody has low stomach acid, very common problem. We think about people having too much stomach acid, but really stomach acid goes down as we age and it gets damaged. The production gets damaged by just a lot of the diet and lifestyle factors. So Sacha Inchi, I'm looking at 1 ounce of each of these protein powders, and they all have somewhere in the neighborhood of 100, 110, 120 calories for that 1 ounce. So Sacha Inchi has 17 grams of protein in 112 calories. Not shabby. Chocho, which is another South American tuber, and it has high levels of protein, not as much as the Sacha Inchi, but 125 calories have 13-ish grams of protein. Not shabby if we think about how much people really need, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Rice protein, has got same thing, about 90 calories, 22.5 grams of protein. Hemp, 112 calories per 14 grams of protein. So a little lower than the ones we just talked about, but pea protein, 112 calories, 23 grams of protein. Let's look at how that compares to some of the animal proteins. So whey protein, 109 calories, 22 grams of protein, very on par with things like rice and certainly pea protein. Beef protein, 100 grams, because you can get hydrolyzed beef protein powder, 23 grams of protein for 100 and so calories. Collagen, right? Big rage. Everything's collagen and bone broth and all this. 1 ounce is about 126 grams of protein for 100 calories. So that's more. It's actually higher than most of the others. And then egg protein, which is like the perfect protein, but it's 100 calories for 24 grams. So it's not like, you know, if we're eating supplemental protein, that the animal sources are much better. And when we look at amino acid quality and quantity, yes, they might be a little bit different in terms of our needs, but it's not significant. So we really have to judge the person and what they're willing to eat and what they can eat and how well their digestion is working. With the protein powders, we still need to break them down. We still need to have intact digestion, but we can actually get amino acid supplements for people who we determine need more protein. Their digestive tract isn't working very well, and we want to get them extra. This is good for athletes who lead a lot more. We get amino acid supplements, and there's a variety of these, a variety of brands, and one of them is called Perfect Aminos. And one serving of Perfect Aminos, it's 5 grams of amino acids, but it's equivalent to much more protein than you would get as you would get in a particular food. So for example, this 5 grams of amino acids, because of the concentration and the variation on it, is equivalent to about 29 grams of whey protein or soy protein or dairy protein or nuts, eating the nuts, 15 grams of meat, poultry, or fish, or 10 grams of egg protein. So having somebody eat one serving of this over the day, they're going to actually get the amino acids in that they can get into their tissues and they can start doing their repair, their bone repair, hormone replacement, etc. So this is a therapeutic approach to helping people to get more protein. A lot of people try to eat more protein, but because their digestion is so impaired, it's hard for them to get it. And what happens if they just try to eat more of these foods to get it, to get what they need, they end up with stressing their system with too much fat or too much carbohydrate. So there's a lot of ways that you can address this, and there's a lot of ways that you can determine, is somebody need more protein than what they're getting? When we look at this, we have to look at, how do we assess this? We assess it by looking at, are they in osteoporotic state? Have they just had an injury? Are they injured in terms of strains of muscles or ligaments? Are they lifting weights and they need more protein because they need more of that, right? Do they have hormonal imbalances and some indication? Do they have digestive imbalances? So, and is their immune system disrupted, right? So when somebody says to me, I wonder if I need more protein, I'll look at them, their diet, we'll look at how much they're taking in, and we'll look at what their needs are. I'll share with that in a moment. But we also say, do you have obvious signs of that you're not getting enough protein? So are you going to the gym and working out, but your muscles are still flabby, you're not getting growth? Yes, that's a problem, right? You're not getting as much protein as your body needs, or you're not digesting and absorbing the amount of amino acids that your body needs. Do you get sick a lot? Is your immune system disrupted? Do you have hormonal imbalances? Right? So these are all things that I ask people when I'm doing a history to try to determine, but also looking at their diet diary and how much protein they're getting. Because sometimes we see these numbers low, like albumin is low or globulin is low or protein is low, total protein, on their blood tests. And so I want to see, are they not eating enough? Are they not digesting enough? Or are they not absorbing enough? The other sign of low protein and low amino acid intake would be neurotransmitter imbalances, right? And people who have, they don't make enough serotonin or dopamine or GABA, because we need those proteins. But again, it may not be that they're not getting enough, You have to discern between are they getting enough versus are they absorbing enough. So when we look at the protein quality, we know that not all protein sources are created equal. We look at the quality, we look at how much of the 9 essential amino acids that we can't produce, the body can't produce, and look at those in relative amounts. And you can do amino acid testing, the metabolomics test, the NutriVal test, and other kinds of tests, just urine amino acid tests or serum amino acid tests can help you to discern, do these people have enough of all the balance? Most of the people I look at, they're pretty good in their balance, and we find usually one or two that they may be limited in, and sometimes that's related to genetics, sometimes it's related to what they're eating and absorbing, and sometimes it's related to the need. They need more of this amino acid, oftentimes because there's an inborn error of metabolism in the genetics. You know, over the decades, we've been talking about animal sources contain complete proteins, and complete proteins mean we have all of the 9 essential amino acids. That's basically what it means. Plant sources have all of them. They're just in slightly different ratios. So depending on what a person needs, they may need more total protein if they're getting it from plant sources, right? So some like plant sources tend to be a little lower in the sulfur, like the cysteine and methionine, and some people need more, or leucine. So we want to make sure that people are eating protein at every meal. And that doesn't mean they're eating a steak at every meal or eggs at every meal. We showed you that it could be legumes, it could be nuts and seeds, it could be protein powders, and a lot of green leafy vegetables and cruciferous vegetables. And whenever I've done like going into Chronometer and putting my diet in, without focusing on protein, I'm always very, very sufficient, like anywhere from, 75 to 90 grams of protein a day. And for somebody my size, that's plenty of protein. And I know that I'm getting enough because when I lift weights, I develop good musculature and I never get sick. So here's the problem. And I mentioned this earlier. I want to harp on this a little bit. You say, just take 200 grams of protein, or everybody needs 150 grams a day of protein. That might be too much for people. And when we exceed what the body needs for structural repair, and for making amino acids and making hormones and making immune system function and making enzymes, then the leftover gets converted into glucose. Or it goes out and we have what we call nitrogenous wastes in so the BUN might go too high. Well, and the kidneys get stressed because they have to get rid of it. So I don't know what that number is for each person. There are lots of theories, and I'll talk about that in a minute, about how do you calculate this for each person. But we want to make sure that people are getting not too much, not too little, the just right, the Goldilocks principle, right? Not too little, not too much, just right. Because too much, the branched chain amino acids, those tend to convert into glucose, which could put a stress on somebody who has a genetic tendency or a lifestyle-induced tendency to high blood sugar, to insulin resistance, to diabetes, etc. So we need to be looking at the recommended daily intake for the person and helping them to determine. So if you work one-on-one with people, you can help people determine for each person. If you don't and you work in groups, you give them formulas and you help each person to do it for themselves. Okay? Excess calories in any form, whether it's protein, carbohydrate, or fat, it's all going to lead to weight gain, right? It's just excess calories. And if someone has a calorie sufficient whole foods diet, they're unlikely to be protein deficient unless there's some, you know, crazy something going on with them. Calorie sufficient. So when you have people who are trying to lose weight and they're cutting calories, they may not be getting enough protein. And that's where you need to intervene. And if they're trying to keep their intake low and they're not eating, you know, highly dense protein sources, they may need to be taking some sort of protein supplement, amino acids or a protein powder. So I want to talk about calculating protein needs. This is all over the map, no matter who you read. There's a lot of authors right now who are talking about protein-forward diets. Protein's the most important. And one person says, I think everybody, no matter their size, no matter their situation, needs to be getting about 130 grams or 150 grams of protein every day. That's not true for everybody. There are people who need that much, and there are people who need more. but majority of people probably need less than that, okay? So some of the calculations, Dr. Karazian just published something and said anywhere from 0.5 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. Okay, at the low end, 0.45, somebody weighs 150 pounds, that's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 75 or less grams. If there's somebody who is weighing 300 pounds, it's not their weight itself, it's their ideal weight, their lean body weight. Because just because you're 150 pounds ideally, and then you put on 100 pounds of fat, doesn't mean you need more protein, right? You need less calories, and there's other things you do. You probably need less carbs. But we can't use that, so we use the ideal. So if somebody's very underweight and they weigh 95 pounds and they should weigh 110 or 120, then we want to calculate it based on their ideal weight. If somebody weighs 250 pounds and they should weigh 140, then we want to calculate it based on the 140. So that's one range. There's another that talks like 0.8 to 1.2 milligrams per kilogram, right? Kilogram is 2.2 kilograms is 1 pound. So that's a different calculation. And so, you know, what is it? What's the variation here? How active are they? Are they in a state where they're lifting weights, so they're a bodybuilder and they're putting on muscle and they want to put on muscle? Yeah, they need the higher end. Are they someone who's just been injured? They have broken bones. They have, you know, poor skeletal muscle structure. They're going to need more. You have somebody who's light and not very active couch potato, they're going to need less. You have an elderly person, people as they age are told that they need less protein. They actually don't need less protein. They probably need more because the body's starting to break down. Children need more in percentage to their weight. So we have to calculate this based on the individual person. Being careful to, if I'm going to err on the side, I'm erring on the side of a little bit too much rather than too little. So if I take somebody who weighs 100 pounds and I do 0.45 of their 100 pounds, then that's 45 grams of protein. And I say, okay, the other end of it would be 100 grams of protein. Now, depending on who that person is, if that person's lifting weights and trying to put on weight, I'm going to have them go closer to that 100 grams of protein, right? If they are not doing anything and they're, you know, they're unable to do that, I'm going to go a little bit less. So you've got to use this as and use your clinical judgment in determining this. I'm just giving you guidelines. There's differing opinions all over the map. But somewhere you take a 120-pound female, they probably need somewhere between 50 and 85, 90 grams, depending on what they're doing, right? They don't need 180 grams of protein. So these are the things that we have to consider and we have to think about as we're working with people. I made a list here of some of the things and some of the protein content of various foods, plant versus animal. So tempeh, which is a soy protein, not everybody can do it, but it's a fermented soy protein. 1 cup contains 31 grams of protein. That's a lot of protein. 1 cup. 1 cup is like, you know, it's a little small amount. You cube it up, you stir fry it with veggies. That's 31 grams. Edamame, which is soy, fresh soybeans, which still has the liquid content in it. A cup of those, 17 grams. And if you've ever been to like a Japanese restaurant and they put them out as the appetizer instead of bread, like you'd get in an Italian restaurant, and you're just munching on them, it's pretty easy to eat a cup of edamames. Okay, so that's 17 grams. Tofu. A half a cup of tofu is about 10 grams. Most people eat a lot more than a half a cup. I know my son used to make his stir fries with tofu. He would eat probably a cup and a half to 2 cups. And that was when he was a kid. Quinoa has about 8 grams per cup. That's about a serving size for quinoa. It's also high in carbs. So you have to also be taking this into account as you're defining the good diets for people. Now they need to be watching that. Beans, on average, a half a cup is 8 grams, so that would be 16 per cup. A cup is more likely to be the typical serving size, but we talked about lupini versus black versus lentils. They're all very different, so you can help people. I use an app called Chronometer to help me determine what people are getting in and help them to define their diet. So a cup of cooked pasta, which is minuscule compared to what most people eat, has about 8 grams of protein. Depends on the type, you know. White rice flour pasta is not so good versus a whole grain. But there's now like lentil pasta and bean-based pastas. And there's one that's made of lupini beans. And it's very high protein. So the serving size for that is actually 20 grams of protein. That's a lot. Right? That's a really hefty amount. And if you couple that with a big bunch of veggies, which is how you should be eating anything like that, big bunch of veggies, and you've got broccoli and kale and cauliflower and other things like that, maybe some sprinkle it with hemp seeds, and you got a really hefty meal with a lot of protein. So the whole concept of not being able to get enough protein from a plant-based diet is a little off. We're doing a podcast episode on plant-based diets versus carnivore. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of controversy there on like what people really should be eating. And we'll have another episode all about that. But yeah, when you look at this, it's not deficient in plant versus animal. There are definite differences in the balance of amino acids. But when we figure out how much of each of those amino acids somebody really needs, we're doing okay. Calorie sufficient whole foods diet. So if you're on a plant-based diet and you're eating a lot of processed foods, you're maybe not getting enough protein, right? You might be eating too much in the way of sweets and chips and all this other stuff. That's not going to give you the right amount of protein. But if it's a whole food plant-based diet, or a whole food animal-based plant strong diet, you're going to get a lot of protein and not have to worry about it. So this is what you have to assure your patients and clients when you're working with them. Even a cup of brown rice, 5 grams of protein. So it's hard to be deficient when you're eating. When people get deficient, it's because they're just eating processed foods. There are some special considerations. We talked about excess protein. People who eat a lot of red meat or purine-rich foods, they can trigger a gout episode. Some of these people have a genetic tendency towards it, but you know, you will hear a lot about men that are, you know, the busy executives who are drinking a lot of wine and red meat. Gout is very common, so we have to be careful about too much, especially the purine-rich that are in meat. Somebody has digestive issues. They may not be breaking down their proteins, and they're going to get digestive issues if they have too much. And that's where we need to look at, do they need enzymes? Do they need HCL or bitters that stimulate HCL? We have to optimize their digestion, right? And the biggest thing is when we're eating a very high protein diet, if it's animal protein, they're going to be fiber deficient and phytonutrient deficient. So we have to be looking at each person as an individual and customize their diet recommendations. So let's look at some clinical applications of all the protein considerations. For weight management, protein does have a satiety to it, like feel more satiated when there's more protein in the meal. Not for everyone, but for most people, right? So if they feel more full, they're going to eat less, and so they're going to help to control their weight. When somebody is an athlete who's building muscle and needs to be building muscle, we need to have extra protein for that increased metabolism. For blood sugar control, a lot of people out there who are anti-plant protein and pro-animal protein are talking about, yeah, protein is important in regulating blood sugar spikes. Yes, and is what I say. Yes, the protein mixed with carbs will lower the whole total glycemic effect of those carbs. But also, if it's too much protein, it's going to get converted into glucose. And then, you know, if we have too much protein in the gut microbiome needs more fiber. And if we're pushing out fiber in lieu of animal-based proteins and having a meal that's primarily protein, we're not going to get the right fiber. We're not going to get those colorful fibers that help the enterocytes, that help to keep the lining of the digestive tract intact and to help to have a good microbiome. So there's a lot of considerations here. And certainly, protein is helpful for people who are doing heavy-duty sports and breaking down muscle, right? When you're lifting weights, you're breaking down muscle, and you have to have protein to be able to put it back together. I will say, you need amino acids to put it back together. The protein the body takes breaks down into amino acids. So if you have somebody who's a special consideration, I don't recommend that you have them go eat a pound of steak a day to get more protein, because it's just going to load up their track and have too much fat. But if you give them, you know, some maybe amino acid supplementation to help with that repair, it's going to be a better alternative. Even though it's not whole food, you know, you get to a point where somebody's doing something that's not just day-to-day human. You know, it's not just like the day-to-day functioning. We got to help. We have to support and supplement. So a lot to be considered for protein. And I highly recommend that you take this as a starting point. You do your research. You may have bias to one side. You may have a bias to the other side. But I think we come together in the middle and we have a balanced approach. And we look at a person for, are they getting enough amino acids to supply their needs? Do they have signs of being out of balance in terms of not developing muscle, gut lining not repairing, et cetera, et cetera? So we need to look at this. And you and I, we're in this position as functional practitioners where we get to help people on a level that most doctors don't, because they don't have the training there. So I highly recommend that you use this ability, that you work with people to help optimize their diet to their lifestyle, to their genetics, to their health needs. For more details on this, check out other podcast episodes. We have so many podcast episodes on nutrition and hormones and all that sort of stuff, and even genetics. And visit inemethod.com and become part of our community. So I thank you. And until next time, shine on. Thanks for listening to Reinvent Healthcare. We are part of the movement to change healthcare for the better. If you liked this episode, leave a rating and a review. And for more resources to support you in growing a thriving and fulfilling practice, visit our website at inemethod.com.